Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of The Jedi Way here on the Outlaw Nation channel. I am the Outlaw, John Rocha, riding alongside Chicago's own Laura Kelly, coming in from a galaxy far, far away herself. Laura, how are you?
I'm feeling amazing. I am rocking my Chicago Schmodown shirt today. I think this was this my first live event? This may have been my, besides the one that I was in up on stage, I think this, first live event I ever attended was last April in Chicago, 2019. Rapping.
Yeah, 1,000 people were there. I remember I didn't get a chance to go to that. I flew out right before the live event was supposed to happen because I wasn't playing. So I'm like, I got a little bit like, oh, if I'm not playing, I don't want to be there.
Well, there was like a snowstorm that was coming in.
There was
like
a snowstorm, got delayed,
so you lucked out.
I did, because so many people got delayed coming home. Ken, Christian, Ruvalcaba, so many people got caught in the snowstorm. So I regret missing that event because it's the biggest live event we've ever done. But by the same token, I don't regret not getting stuck in Wichita, Kansas or something like that, doing a planes, trains, and automobiles situation. Anyway, here on the Jedi Way, for those of you who are new, thank you so much for watching our show or downloading it on the Outlaw Nation Podcast Network. Appreciate you taking a chance to talk some Star Wars with us. This is not your typical type of Star Wars show where you just talk about the events that have been happening for the week and just go down, oh, this got released, this got released. This is more about us talking about or tackling a philosophical concept that occurs in the Star Wars universe and talking about it through the characters, through the movies, through the books, through the comic books, through the video games, through the animated series, all of that as it comes up. And for those of you who watched or listened to the John Boyega episode we did, thank you so much. There was such a interesting conversation that Laura and I had, but also reading the comments, there was a lot of conversations being had by you all that was very fun and interesting to read.
There were like some full-blown essays in the comments that were like super, super impressive, well thought out, really insightful. Yeah. Like, listen, the people that come to this channel are drawn to this channel and this podcast feed. I'm like, super impressive group. I'm all about it. Like, right on.
they're like, you think Roka's long-winded? You just wait till we get on our essays. And so it's always fun to read what they have to say. And today we are tackling the concept of courage in the Star Wars universe. And also because the new High Republic novel is coming out that has to deal with courage. And also we're going to touch on the Daisy Ridley comments that she made to Josh Gad, who was guest hosting for Jimmy Kimmel Live. We'll touch on that later on in the show. But starting off the show, we're going to talk about the concept of courage in the world of Star Wars. Do you have a place you want to jump off from here, Laura?
No, I'm not too picky. I think that it's kind of interesting when you think about courage, not just necessarily in Star Wars, but sort of in fiction as a whole. I kind of think of it in terms of, there's two ways. I feel like there's like chaotic courage and there's like rational courage. And I love that we kind of have examples of both of those in Star Wars, beyond just courage, caravan of, which is probably one of the best jumping off places we could start. I can see that you've got that here on the list.
The Ewok adventure. I mean, how can you not, for God's sakes? It's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, you look at the Ewoks themselves, in Return of the Jedi, a lot of courage there. Even though they're on their home planet or home court, you might say if you're a sports person, they still have to fight the stormtroopers here who have way higher technology, way better technology, technological weapons, way better, tracking systems, all of that, their equipment, their speeders, all of that they have to deal with, the AT-STs. And yet they're still able, with rocks, sticks, ingenuity, logs, are able to get the victory there. So even against insurmountable odds, or what appear to be insurmountable odds, having the courage to believe in you and the people around you to fight back and get the job done and win is an essential part of courage. Courage is not about the results. Courage is about the desire to do it, the willingness to overcome the fear or have the fear right alongside you and still do it anyway, don't you think, Laura?
No, I totally agree. And you know what's kind of funny, and I have to confess this, I've only seen Caravan of Courage. I've actually not seen the Battle for Endor, the second one.
So right.
It's on my list. But yeah, Caravan of Courage, I watched about probably now 2 years ago going back, and that was It is quite an adventure.
Yeah, and courage has been a big part of Star Wars. Laura mentioned the Caravan of Courage, but also there's a ship called Courageousness that's a part of the Star Wars franchise. The book we were talking about, Star Wars, The High Republic, A Test of Courage, that's the one that's coming out soon. And there was, even for Rogue One, there was a campaign called Hashtag Create Courage. It was a series of videos about confronting you know, yourself, or wanting to achieve more and getting past that and taking a chance on yourself. All of that is there. And certainly speaking of Rogue One, there's a lot of courage in Rogue One. And I think there's both examples that you mentioned here, Laura, the chaotic courage and the courage ahead of time to do what needs to be done. And certainly Jyn Erso throughout the movie is showing courageous moments or courageous movements or courageous decisions throughout the movie, from child all the way up until the end, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree. And I love any excuse to talk about Rogue One. But I think Jyn Erso is one of those great examples of one of these characters that sort of will go from one end of the spectrum to the other when it comes to, you know, rash. You know, she starts by having, you know, really kind of trying to play it off cool and trying not to, you know, get, I think, too deep into the rebels and their cause when she first joins up with Cassian and K2. And then, you know, he witnesses this event where she saves this little girl from blaster fire from the Empire. And I love that, you know, it's just kind of this random burst of courageousness and bravery that we see from her. And then as we go in the film and as she sort of progresses and kind of grows as a character and evolves, we see a lot more of that sort of that rational courageousness in her. You know, the speech that she gives at the round table to the rebels at the end before they leave for Scarif, that's one great example. So yeah, Jyn Erso is a great example of that.
Yeah. Do you have other examples of courage you want to talk about?
You know, Leia is a big one for me, I think. Yeah. I think of all the characters, and you know, obviously there's a lot of longevity when it comes to Leia. We have lots of examples to draw on, but she's another one for me where I always think back to like the first moment that we meet Leia, where she's not even showing bravery so much in the face of like this huge antagonist, Vader, and like the first scene that we meet her, and she's more like exasperated. Like she's not even like having to be like brave and really stand up. She's just like, you know, I am on a diplomatic mission. Like, let me be on my way. And it's just, it's so charming and so delightful. And so, you know, that's kind of one of those jumping off moments, I think, for me, in terms of, you know, great examples of bravery in Star Wars. It always comes back to Leia for me, you know, starting even from, you know, when she's sort of rescued from the herd cell and the Death Star. And, you know, that leads us to Han Solo, who also has a lot of that chaotic courage, sure. I think, in that first movie.
Well, all the way up until the end. I mean, I think there are moments where Han is courageous in spite of himself. And even in Solo, A Star Wars Story, at the end, you know, taking the chance to give what he gives to Enfys Nest, and what the result may be, the consequence of that might be, certainly all the way up until the end when he's on that metal catwalk walking up to his son, that's courage too. Look, I know he is going towards the dark side. I know he has this lightsaber. I know that I'm just walking out there by myself to confront my son, to try to bring him back. And he must have been afraid in that moment. He must have been. And I know it's a character and what have you, but thinking of Han Solo, you're putting yourself in the shoes and or the boots of Han Solo in that moment, you can't help but think he must have had some fear walking out there, because it's his family, because it's his son, and because there's really no net below him walking out on that catwalk. Anything could have happened. And even in the moment when he is stabbed and killed by Kylo, he still has the courage or the strength to reach up and stroke his face to have one last moment of love with his son before he accepts his fate and falls over and dies. So it's like those moments as well. Sometimes it is confronting, like Rogue One, confronting the insurmountable odds, knowing you might die. There is courage in that. And Jyn's journey in Rogue One, as you said, leading up to that speech, considering they had to talk her into it. Mon Mothma had to talk her into it near the beginning of the movie. Her delivering that speech when people are afraid, when people are not sure, when they're thinking they're not going to, that this attack on Scarif is not going to work out, She's the one that motivates them. She's the one that inspires people to go after and do it, you know, and that's what you want to see in Star Wars. And I think a lot of that inspires us in our lives, I would think, to be courageous in certain moments, to be courageous when we're called upon. It's not always easy, and sometimes you have to negotiate that at your own pace, but the end result is something that you could be proud of.
It's definitely inspiring, and I think that it's always fun, too, when Star Wars can work in that courageousness with a little bit of humor as well. When you talk about Han Solo, my first thought is always him running down the halls of the Death Star screaming and chasing the stormtroopers. And like, it's just like, well, he certainly has courage. That sort of like chaotic, like recklessness is just makes it so fun and kind of silly. But you know, we see it in like the Gryffindors and Harry Potter and the Dauntless and the Divergent series. And you know, there's always sort of that kind of chaotic energy. And then there's also the lack of self-preservation that can sometimes make it entertaining. And you know, when I think of that lack of self-preservation component, I always think of Nora Wexley and the Aftermath trilogy.
Great point.
She's also featured in Resistance Reborn, but I think we see a lot more of it in Aftermath, that like complete lack of self-preservation is just, it's such a danger to her. There's so many different times when I remember talking about this with Alice when this book came out, we were just like, she should be dead. There is no reason that Nora Wexley should still be alive. And it's just, she's an ace pilot. She's, you know, flying her Y-wing in the Battle of Endor inside the Death Star. And I'm just like, there is no reason you should still be alive. But she brings a lot, I think, to the table in terms of courageousness as well.
Yeah, and I know we're going to get to Daisy Ridley later on in the show. But, I mean, that's an incredible example of courage. A young woman with a strong, self-possessed abilities and belief in herself. And although that radiates when you're watching her, there's still moments of fear that she has to negotiate for herself, you know, and kind of go on her own trial of courage throughout that sequel trilogy. From the beginning there, where she's on that planet, just living her life, doing her thing. And then what she eventually gets called upon, she is the one leading that fight. She's the one dragging Finn into the Falcon. She's the one flying the Falcon. She's the one putting herself into these situations she's the one flying over to Octo to confront Luke about his, at the end there, about his non-participation in what's happening in the galaxy. All of that takes courage, even though it may come across as this kind of self-belief, strong self-belief, it still takes courage and there's still fear there. It's just, this is more important than my own fear. And so that also is a unique brand of courage as well.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the great things about Rey is that we get such a great evolution of her story. I mean, she starts on this, you know, this desert planet, sort of same, but not same. So the situation as Luke. Yeah, yeah. But you know, Luke's desire is to get off this planet immediately and start living his life and have an adventure and go to the academy and fly, you know, starfighters. And hers is very much to stay put. I mean, like Rey has no desire to leave Jakku at all. She's got this drive to stay there and try and wait for the family that she thinks is going to be coming back. So it's interesting to see that character go from that in The Force Awakens to what we even have by the end of The Force Awakens, and that, you know, that the great journey that she goes on to Octo in The Last Jedi, and then where she ends up in Rise of Skywalker. It's just, you know, it's a great evolution in terms of bravery for that character too.
Yeah. And there's small moments that feel powerful in the moment when they're happening, but can get lost in the mix of Star Wars. Shmi willingly handing over Anakin to Qui-Gon Jinn is a moment of courage as well. It's very reminiscent for people who may remember Citizen Kane, when his mom hands him over to Thatcher because she knows he can have a better life being schooled by a man of more intelligence and means than she can give him. And so letting go of your child to possibly achieve a greater thing in life, accomplishment, title, whatever, takes a lot of courage from a mother as well in that moment, I think.
And it's even more heartbreaking because she's telling him to be brave, and you know that it's really just her trying to like tell herself and talk herself up. But that's a great example too. I mean, Shmi's a fantastic character, and it's one of those things where it'd be great if we got like more Shmi backstory someday.
A Shmi prequel, a Shmi prequel. You see him?
Like, it's kind of cool that it's like a little bit of a mystery. Maybe they'll leave it like that. But like, it would just be nice to know, like, how did she come to be in this situation where she like ended up a slave somewhere in this place where slavery is supposed to be outlawed in the Republic? It's just it would be interesting to know, is all I'm saying.
And do we settle on who the dad is? Is that still a mystery? Is that still a mystery, Laura?
It's still a mystery, yeah. I mean, there was this whole comic that came out that people thought that it was Palpatine, but it's not really supposed to be Palpatine, I don't think. You know, I think it's one of those things where it was just like a, it was like a vision. It wasn't necessarily real, but it was depicted in the canon, so people ran with it, but, you know, who knows?
Yeah, they're walking real close to that Immaculate Conception situation. But yeah,
exactly.
I remember that. Another moment of courage I think you have to talk about is Qui-Gon Jinn when he confronts the council about Anakin, you know, and yeah, it could be a little bit of pride as well. But I think more than anything else, confronting your fellow Jedi to call them out for not having faith in the potential of a young kid and turning him around. That takes a lot of courage as well to confront your friends, your family, your fellow clan or group or tribe to call them out and make them see things. You know, we're seeing it now all over Hollywood. So many actors and writers and creatives of color are confronting their fellow white creatives as well about the systemic racism or about the unconscious racism that's been happening in the casting, in the hiring practices, in the films that were nominated. All of that, it takes courage to step forward. I think we're seeing it with John Boyega's interview that he did with GQ. I think we're seeing it with Ray Fisher. We're seeing people who are willing to walk out there and risk their careers to speak their truth. And that takes a lot of courage, I think, as well. And I think Qui-Gon is doing that in that moment for Anakin.
I completely agree. And I think that one of the things about that I was thinking about courage, and I was sort of thinking, like, what exactly, like, what is the opposite or the antithesis of courage? And I think a lot of my sort of instinct initially was that fear is sort of the antithesis, but it's kind of not. And on second thought, I'm kind of thinking that, like, indifference is sort of the antithesis of courage. And then, you know, when it comes to Star Wars, you think about the Jedi Order and how Qui-Gon came to them and told them, like, hey, I found this boy. He was a slave in the Republic. Like, also FYI, there's slavery in the Republic. And we find out, you know, in other parts of the Star Wars storytelling that, like, the Jedi Order was just kind of indifferent to that. Like, it's yes, slavery is supposed to be outlawed in the Republic, and it wasn't. And not only did they, like, not do anything, they just kind of went about their way. It didn't really affect them at all. And I think that sort of indifference was the beginning of the end and the downfall. And, you know, we see it in later in the sequel trilogy or leading up to it with the fall of the New Republic, with Leia presenting the New Republic with the fact that, you know, the First Order is this rising threat that we need to be taking action with. And everyone just kind of wrote her off like she was crazy. And so, you know, that indifference to act and that inability to act is really, I think, sort of the antithesis of courage when we're talking about And I think we're seeing a lot of that, too, when you talk about, you know, the indifference of Hollywood.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're absolutely 1,000% correct. Indifference is the antithesis to courage in action. Because of the indifference, right? And we can go back to and we don't want to get too deep in this, but you can go back to the history of this country, right? We all love this country. We all love being a part of this country. We do recognize its flaws and things it still needs to work on. But how many people back when slavery was a thing for so many years in this country ignored it or didn't do anything about it or just kind of like were indifferent about it in the North and in the South, not just in the South, but in the North as well, that too. And so I think there are parallels to the Republic in that way, because we all like to see ourselves as the Republic, the good guys in that way. But there's stuff in the past. There's stuff that needs to get confronted, dealt with, and moved on from. And that's a lesson for any country and any franchise to learn and explore. And I wish they'd explore more of that slavery aspect as well in Star Wars, kind of really interrogate what was going on here and what were the exchanges that were being made for what they thought was the greater good. There's a way deeper story to explore, I think, if Disney ever allows that to be explored, that would be fun to see.
Yeah, you talk about lessons that need to be learned from indifference. You could take a look at the current administration and the current pandemic that is happening. A little bit of indifference may have been our enemy there, I think, early enough.
Fair enough. Let's move on to, are there evil characters that we consider evil or dark side characters that have shown courage? Are there any dark side characters? Because, you know, sometimes, speaking of that, the pandemic, and again, we're not going to get too deep in this, but today or yesterday, an Olympic volleyball player, Kerry Walsh Jennings, she came out and posted on her Instagram that she felt that she was brave to go shopping without a mask. She thought, risking the ire of people who wear masks and risking getting kicked out of stores, in her mind, and for the people who don't wear masks, they see that as courage. And so are there examples of people who are doing the wrong things, but in their minds, they're being courageous, standing up to what they think is the wrong way to go in the world? In Star Wars.
It's hard to think about it. I think, you know, there might be something there when it comes to like Maul in the sort of at the end of Clone Wars, like season 7 of the Clone Wars. He knew that something was coming. He knew that something was going on. He knew that there was something big coming with Anakin, with Palpatine, and that it was, you know, that it was going to get bad. So maybe there was, he did try. In his defense, I think he did try to sort of make it known, whether it was to Ahsoka or to, I can't remember all the examples, but I feel like there was an effort there. It's hard for me to think of like villains being courageous, because I think so much of what motivates the villains in Star Wars and in a lot of storytelling is fear. And so it's hard for me to kind of wrap my mind around that. So is there something that you have in mind in terms of like courageous villains in Star Wars storytelling?
Well, listen, one day we're going to get into this larger conversation about Kylo Ren, but I think there's something to explore with Kylo Ren here and his courage. Yeah, I mean, he has that fear with Luke and what happens there, and that inspires him. But he has a certain level of courage to confront himself, to go on this journey, to figure out where he belongs, to figure out whether his power stems from his grandfather or his power stems from his mom and his dad. There's all of that there going on for him. And what does that mean? And as he goes through, and yes, killing his dad, you could argue from his point of view, in a courageous moment, to step forward and cut off all connections that could stop his march towards the darkness, you know, cutting out the light. And then later on in Last Jedi, what he does to try to push that narrative forward, to try to confront Luke, takes courage to confront a better Jedi master, a more schooled, a Jedi master has been around for way longer than you, or it's stupidity. It all depends. It's all perspective, I think. And then at the end, of course, it takes courage to confront the mistakes of your past and find a way back to redemption. Whether you agree with him being redeemed or not in The Rise of Skywalker, you can't argue that it does take strength. It does take courage to realize the mistakes of your past and try to atone for them. And so those examples are possibilities within Kylo Ren's journey of possible courageous, because courage doesn't necessarily imply good or bad. Courage is just a thing. It's all a perspective of whether you think what you're doing is courageous. And I think some people who are evil feel like they are doing the courageous thing by confronting the masses who are telling them whether what they're doing is bad.
Yeah. And you know what, when you say that, it actually made me think of another example. And,
okay.
You know, we will get into Kylo Ren eventually and Ben Solo in a deeper conversation probably someday. Sure. I think it's inevitable. But, yes. You know, one thing that I kind of thought of as you were talking about this of confronting the dark side is a great example of that is Quinlan Vos in the novel Disciple. And he's this great example of this character who had purely good intentions of wanting to tap into the dark side and try and use it in his favor and use it for the greater good. Right. And, you know, whether he was sort of, obviously he wasn't totally successful, but it was such an interesting story and such an interesting deep dive into like a different corner of the Force and a different section of sort of studying that. And that was one of those things where it's like, I think, you know, in a way, Anakin tried that, and I think you could say Kylo Ren tried that, but like Quinlan Vos is kind of the only character that like went that route and went down that rabbit hole and ended up coming out of it alive.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wasn't totally successful in his mission, but at least he survived which is something, I suppose.
Good point. Good point. Yeah. I mean, you know, we have to understand this as a concept. So the concept is itself is not good or bad. The concept exists and can be seen through different people's eyes as good or bad. I got to ask, we got to move to droids. Are droids courageous? Do droids have emotions? Can droids be the definition of the word courageous?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think R2-D2 is a fantastic example of that. I mean, of that, especially of the chaotic side of bravery. But he's the first thing that comes to mind. But I think a more recent example that came to mind when we were talking about droids was the three droids, or the sort of primary three droids that we see helping Ahsoka and Rex in the season 7 finale of The Clone Wars. And I just rewatched some of that clip, and it's just like, oh, it was like so emotional. And it's like so much more emotional for me to see those droids sort of get like picked off one by one than to see like any of the clones bite it. Like it was, the droids were it was so much more of an emotional connection because they're just so loyal and they're so brave. And it was, that's definitely one of my favorite examples of a way that they were very much successful in making me feel things in season 7 of Clone Wars.
They're almost like the house elves, right? From Harry Potter. Like you're just like, if they're like Dobby is so courageous in his own way, going against his masters and helping Harry. And then the end result is so tragic for Dobby that you're just like, I can see that connection in my mind to the droids as well. You know, what they go through. And every time you see one of them endure what they endure, it's certainly watching, a C-3PO at times he's, you know, so irritating and all of that with him and the comments he makes, but he does genuinely feel connection to human being. Is a very vulnerable, open-hearted guy, except with R2, of course. But with everyone else, he's very open-hearted and caring. And so he feels the pain and the emotion. And yet, C-3PO, for all his like complaining about, we're going to get killed, he's still willing to go on these missions. He's still willing to put himself in harm's way. And I think that's a positive moment of courage as well. Even though his fear radiates off him like a neon sign, he's still willing to put himself into those situations.
Yeah, I mean, and it brings it back to that like complete lack of self-preservation skills that some droids have. And C-3PO has more of that. He's much more, I think, human in that aspect than some of the droids are, where they just have this undying, or some of the astromechs, I guess, that just have this undying loyalty.
Yeah.
And you know, when it comes to lack of self-preservation, they're willing to kind of sacrifice anything, and a lot of times they do in the end.
Yeah, yeah. What about Chewie? Does Chewie have courage? Do we see Chewie confront this?
Yeah, I think so. I always think about that moment when Han Solo falls over the edge and then he screams and he shoots at Kylo, and I'm just like, oh God, how sad. That tragic roar and of agony.
Yeah, I mean, to stick by this rebellion the whole time, you know, Chewie must have a great deal of courage and to stay by Han's side. And God knows all those different things that they get into, the different adventures we've seen in the extended universe. People have read in the extended universe, seen that and what he might have gone through. And, you know, we go back before we wrap up this section of the show. You go back to the idea of courage within the Jedi, and that's one of the things they teach Jedi when they're starting out, the idea of courage, the confronting evil, that you cannot be a Jedi unless you confront evil, unless you have the courage to confront evil. It's one of the, I think, four or five tenets that you have to have as a Jedi in order to achieve full Jedi status. And that's important, right? The good confronting evil, or what is evil in their minds, in order to understand the power of courage and inspire others to follow your path as well.
Yeah. And I think that's a great, it's one of those things where it's really well played. I think when it comes to Ahsoka Tano, and we see this young Padawan come out of, you know, all of this Jedi training where they're instilling these life skills and these things in these young kids, and to then see how they take it and how they play with it and how they, you know, inspire others with it. It's a great journey that we get to see her go on in the Clone Wars. And I think we see lots of examples of that.
Absolutely. Merriam-Webster defines courage as mental or moral strength to venture, persevere, and withstand danger, fear, or difficulty. So I think a lot of us in our lives have to find those moments of courage, or are confronted with moments where we have to show courage. And having media like Star Wars, having media like this franchise that shows us examples from from being a child all the way to being older that we can go back to and watch and kind of download and refresh our memories about is important in this world for those moments when they pop up. And we can take inspiration from the things we see in Star Wars to bring courage to our own lives, when, especially nowadays, Laura, with everything that's happened with COVID and people struggling in their lives and trying to put two pennies together to be able to pay rent or get food or whatever. It takes a lot of courage to get out there every day and try to fight to get a job or fight to get hired or fight to make money so that you can have a brighter future for yourself or for your family.
Oh, and talk about just fighting to keep your own mental health stable is, I think, a big one for everyone, too. But yeah, wholeheartedly agree with what you said. Yeah. So should we talk about Daisy Ridley?
I think we should. At this point, if you all want to leave a, you know, if you want to leave a comment at this point, for those of you who are watching the show about courage, let us know what you think about courage. Let us know what examples of courage you love to see in the Star Wars universe. What's one you go back to all the time? Let us know in the comments section below. Always hit like on the video as well. The more likes, the more comments you guys leave. It elevates the visibility of the show on the YouTube algorithm and puts it there on the side for people to click and watch if they want to see another Star Wars show that tackles things from a completely different angle, like we do on The Jedi Way. But yes, Daisy Ridley, let's jump into it. What do you got for us, Laura, on Daisy Ridley? What happened here?
Okay, well, my first question, and I want to know kind of what you think about this idea. I feel like this interview, and this probably isn't a reach, this was like obviously planned, questions approved ahead of time. Jimmy Kimmel is a show that happens on ABC, Disney's parent company. And so I, you know, there wasn't anything about this that I think that we learned that Disney was not aware was going to be happening. So I don't think that this was any kind of gotcha moment that we got from Daisy Ridley. And I don't think there were a ton of surprises in this, but it certainly got fans talking. What were your thoughts?
I think it's a, when you put it in that context, I think it's fascinating to look at all the factors that are combined in this situation. As you said, ABC show owned by Disney, Disney owns Star Wars. Daisy Ridley was under contract to Disney. I don't know what the situation of her contract is with Star Wars at this point, what the NDA situations are after Star Wars, but sir, and Josh Gad has been someone that Daisy Ridley has had previous interviews with about the Star Wars franchise in the process of Star Wars. That has been a thing that they've had numerous conversations about and that have been put online. So you're absolutely right here. This was, I wouldn't say staged, but this was certainly discussed and presented, and maybe her answers weren't necessarily cleared, but the questions I know were cleared. So her responses, though, seemed very genuine, off the cuff, and honest. And she wasn't saying this as a way to kind of denigrate Star Wars or denigrate the writers or denigrate JJ or Rian Johnson or Kathleen Kennedy or anybody involved at Lucasfilm. She was simply saying, I was told this. In the end, then they changed it to this, and in the end, we went with what we went with. And people can make of that what they will, and they certainly did, Laura. It split it like Holdo split that freighter again. It totally did all day today. People were up in arms about it, but in my opinion, this was listen, this is the way I put it. Oscar Isaac started this a few months ago when he spoke about not wanting to come back to Star Wars, not being part of it. It was fun doing it, what it was, but I didn't have a lot of control. I'd rather do my other stuff, smaller independent films or films where a little more weight to them. Then John Boyega's interview revealing what he revealed, and then boom, Daisy Ridley. All three of the stars speaking out about it, kind of to me, closing the book on this trilogy, putting it back on the shelf, and hoping all of Star Wars moves on to see what's coming next. Daisy basically confirming to a lot of people there was no real plan, or their plan was constantly changing. And in the end, they went with what they went with, and we got what we got. We can't change it now, so it's done. And I feel like that's what she was saying, giving us closure in some indirect way. But a lot of people apparently don't want to see it that way. So. What do you
think? Yeah, I mean, you know, we talk about closure, and one of the last things that Josh Gad asked her was, you know, do you think that you would ever return to this franchise and, you know, say in 10 years or something? Yeah. And, you know, she did say, you know, I really do feel like Rise of Skywalker tied everything up. I don't, you know, but also that, you know, 10 years is a long ways off and a lot could change. You know, look how much the world has changed in the last 7 months. So I think, you know, it's not, it's a never say never, which I think is sort of hopeful, but We got to talk about this possibility of an Obi-Wan connection, because this is what really, I think, got fans into a frenzy today. And it's been a talking point, obviously, since the beginning. Lots of people wondering, what is Rey's connection to this trilogy? Is everybody thinking that she had to be related to somebody, which I was part of that too, before I sort of became part of Team Rey Nobody, which is a component of Rey's character that I really enjoyed as a fan. And, you know, to each their own. Everybody has their preference as to sort of who she was and how she turned out. But I think that this possibility that they were thinking, it sounds like around the time of The Force Awakens, that she would have some connection to Obi-Wan's really interesting. What are your thoughts on this?
I love it. I think it's 1,000% what I would have liked to have seen. And just because the fans wanted it and thought of it ahead of time doesn't mean they shouldn't have done it anyway. People can predict or guess your stuff. You can still be impressive with how you execute it. You know, even though the end result was predicted, you can still execute it in a way that's done really well. And I think that could have been the path for them to walk. I think it would have left people feeling stronger about the overall series. It would have put a smile on their faces rather than that weird painting we got at the end of The Rise of Skywalker, that weird 70s Olin Mills painting we got. I mean, all of it was so kind of ham-handed and clumsy that you could tell there were fingers in this pie higher than J.J. Abrams, who were dictating what to put in that movie. And I think that made a lot of us who were watching it feel uncomfortable. Those of us who watch movies for numerous decades, we can tell that. And I think that was a situation that radiated for me, which is why I'll never watch the movie again. I mean, maybe we can do a watch along sometime down the road on the show, but honestly, I have no rush to watch that movie ever again. But if it had been a Kenobi connection, I think that would have been fantastic. I think that would have been very interesting. And I think that would have been correct for the character of Rey, and the courage and the strength and the desire to lead that she showed from the beginning. That would have made sense for her to connect to Obi-Wan in some way. And yes, it would have meant that Obi-Wan broke his vow to have a sex with somebody and have the child, and they had a child. That would have, you know, maybe Mara Jade. Oh no, sorry, that's a separate, that's Luke, but maybe the princess from Clone Wars. Yeah, Satine. Yeah. Maybe there's something here where you have a remembrance or a flashback, or something gets found, and maybe she goes into another cave and has some kind of, sees a vision of Obi-Wan, Ewan coming back playing Obi-Wan, and the Satine situation. That would have been so interesting to see that play out with so much more weight. And and this is not disrespect to anybody who wanted Rey to have parents who were nobodies. I think that's a great path to walk as well. And by the way, the Palpatine path would have been a way to walk as well, if you had set it up from the beginning that was your goal. And it doesn't feel like they did, or if they did, they changed their mind constantly throughout the process of the trilogy.
Well, I want to circle back to one of the things that you said right at the beginning, which is that, you know, fans made a lot of predictions about what we would come to expect and what we would find out about Rey's parentage. And I think that one of the things that scared off the writers of this film was Game of Thrones. I think I think fans of that show spent 2 years speculating about how everything could end and who is going to end up on the Iron Throne.
Right.
And they decided that they were going to go in a complete opposite direction that nobody predicted. And the reason nobody predicted it was because it was awful.
Agreed.
So I think that was sort of a scary thing. But for some reason, they decided to run with it. Well, if fans had predicted this, then let's just throw everyone for a curveball. And I just, I completely agree with you that it would have been okay to go with something that fans had predicted if you could execute it in an interesting way that maybe nobody expected. Just throw something weird in there. But I think, you know, with Obi-Wan, there was definitely, and there was an open door to go through in that situation. We have this past precedence of a relationship that he had with Satine. Right. We have this character in the Clone Wars that is Satine's nephew. We still don't know what his real parentage is.
They could have
run with that 100%. And sure, would that have made some like casual fans feel a little bit excluded? Like people who hadn't watched the Clone Wars? I don't know. But I feel like there was a way that they could have made it happen. But as somebody who was on Team Rey Nobody and still kind of is, I fully acknowledge that the Palpatine thing really threw me for a loop, threw a lot of people for a loop.
Yeah.
I feel like we saw a lot of interviews, or at least one interview that I can recall, where Daisy Ridley said, why does Rey's power have to come from a man? Why can't she just why can't she just be Rey? And you could tell that that was like, that was the plan at some point, was that she would just be Rey Nobody and she wouldn't have to be related to anybody.
Right.
Otherwise, why would she have said that in an interview at some point, you know, in some press junket for some, for one of the movies at one point. So
I think it was before Force Awakens. I think she had suspected or had been told that that's the way they were going to go, that she was not going to have parents of any connection to Star Wars or Jedis. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a bizarre situation. It was fun to kind of see, maybe some people won't call it fun. I think it's fun to see the discourse. I enjoy watching kind of the back and forth and seeing everybody's opinions kind of come back up again and seeing where everyone is. I just have enjoyed watching all day, reading through it. But yeah, it was, it definitely threw people for a loop. I think this interview was really interesting in the way, I do think that maybe some of it was misinterpreted a little bit, where people were talking about how Obi-Wan was something they were considering at the beginning of Rise of Skywalker. And I'm not certain that was the case. Maybe it was, but the way that I heard Daisy really when she was speaking about it was that it was what they were thinking of back when Force Awakens was filming, not necessarily when they were filming Rise of Skywalker.
Right.
But maybe I'm interpreting it differently than others.
Well, she says what at the, when he pitched me episode 9, and said, oh yeah, Palpatine's granddaddy. And I was like, awesome. Then 2 weeks later, he was like, oh, we're not so sure. So that doesn't necessarily mean, yeah. And I think that's the point. They weren't saying, she said at some point it was Kenobi. And then before they pitched me episode 9, or Wes were pitching me episode 9, that's when Palpatine came up. So it doesn't mean that they were kicking around Kenobi like 3 days ago. And then they called her and were like, hey, you know what? Let's do Palpatine. And then 2 weeks later, it was, maybe it's Kenobi. No, it was saying it's Palpatine, but we're also keeping the other options open to play around with. So, but in the end, it still conveys overall there wasn't a real concrete plan here fully. And the trilogy, I don't know, it bit the trilogy in the butt for the most part, in my opinion. But even though there are people who love the sequel trilogy, and I would never tell anyone not to love something if they love it. I think you have every right to like anything in Star Wars. I didn't, but I understand hearing what Daisy's saying, that this was the path they chose, and we got what we got. And by the way, I want Daisy to move past this. I am so in love with her as an actress, as an energy, as a young woman coming into her own in this tough business. I want her to get more opportunities to show her skills as an actress, because it is something to walk off playing six or being in six episodes of British television and then leading a franchise of this size and to deal with the fame, celebrity, and the hassle of doing this, as well as the joy of doing this and the blessings of doing this, as well as she has dealt with it. It is rare for people of that age to be that composed and deal with this massive responsibility the way she has, and seeing her respond to John, she was very kind in the response, very honest and forthright. And yeah, their questions were approved, but her response radiated an authenticity to it. And I want to see her move past this and do other things. And then maybe, as she said, never say never, just like Harrison Ford, who absolutely stomped on the franchise for many, many years, came back to it later on in life, because you mellow as you get older. Trust me, as an older man, you mellow as you get older from your 20s and 30s. You relax a little bit about stuff and you learn to reappreciate it. And maybe 10 years down the road, there's an incredibly awesome director or creator or writer or producer who comes into this and has an incredibly new take on Rey, and she gets re-inspired to take up the mantle again. Could be possible.
Yeah, and I agree. You know, Daisy Ridley's obviously grown a lot. She's learned a lot. She spent 6 years in this franchise, and she's done a fantastic job. And I'm kind of excited to see her like branch out into different genres as, you know, as she finds work in different areas. Like, imagine Daisy Ridley in like a horror film.
Yeah.
Or in like a comedy. So I think that it'll be really fun to kind of see her grow. I know I was really sad the other day when I read something about how she said that she was sort of having trouble finding work. And that she's probably kind of ended up in this place where, you know, she's always going to be associated with Star Wars, especially like in the coming years, which is something that you can take or leave, I suppose, as a director, producer. But I think that's going to be one of those things that is short-lived. I'm sure of it. She's just so charming and so talented.
Agreed.
There's no way that someone isn't going to snatch her up and finds, you know, great jobs for going forward.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. I think that's a great place for us to wrap up this episode of Jedi Way. Can't thank you all enough for for downloading on the Outlaw Nation Podcast Network or watching us here on the YouTube channel here on the Outlaw Nation Network. It's always fun doing the show with Laura. I'm just enjoying having relaxed conversations about Star Wars that don't lead to these, you know, cutthroat responses back and forth. It's just fun to appreciate the franchise from this manner and from this way. And I hope you feel the same way, Laura. I've really been enjoying doing the show with you.
Yeah, I guess it's okay.
Now no, we're getting familiar. Now we're getting familiar. I love it.
No, I'm very much enjoying it too. So this has been a lot of fun. And I love that we can, like, maybe we'll try it. I love this idea of doing like these bonus episodes where we can kind of work in some like news stories and things, but then we can kind of keep our sort of big picture ideas going too. I think this is a really fun balance. And agreed. Looking forward to seeing where it goes.
Yeah. And we might be doing a live show soon. Laura and I are talking about it more and more. So look for the possibility of us doing a live show very, very soon where you all can come in with your questions and your concepts and your theories and your ideas that you'd like us to talk about and expound upon here on the Outlaw Nation Network and on the Jedi Way. So that will be, look for that announcement coming up soon. All right. Until then, we will talk to you next time on the Jedi Way. Laura, what do we have to tell them and where can they find you?
So you can find me on Twitter at @shutup_Laura. You can also find me at that handle on Instagram, though I'm much more active on Twitter. And you can listen to my other podcast, Force Toast, a Star Wars happy hour. That on Twitter is Force Toast Pod. You can find all the links there. How about you, John? Where can they find you?
You can always find me at The Roka Says on Twitter and on Instagram to see all the things we're doing here on the Outlaw Nation Network and other things I've got going on, top 10 cinephiles, what have you. And also, please subscribe to the channel down below. Really important as we march towards 15,000 subscribers, get more and more people involved in it, recruit other people to come be a part of the nation as well. We have great content on here for people to enjoy from many different facets of the world of entertainment. So encourage them to jump in, and politics too. So encourage them to jump in and please hit a like on this video and leave a comment down below. As I said earlier, comments and likes elevates the visibility of this show and this channel for other people to find it and join us as well. All right. That's it for us here on this episode of the Jedi Way. Laura, what do we tell them?
Thank you for tuning in today, dear viewers. And until next time, remember, your focus determines your reality.